From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of July, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, still out of the office on this Monday. However, I'm traveling back from the great state of North Dakota. And if you'd like to check in on the condition of the crop across North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and parts of Illinois, check out our website right now, willag.org. I'm on my annual crop scouting tour, and you can find out what I've been seeing all day long. Also, on this program today, we'll talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and we'll hear a discussion I had yesterday with Jordan Gackle from Cullom, North Dakota. He's a farmer there. They finished up in his part of the world, harvest 19 for corn. Well, in the last week, and actually there's still some standing corn there. And we'll also hear about the livestock sector with the folks over at Western Illinois University on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Monday, we're going to check in with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, but we're recording on Sunday evening because I'm traveling, of course, back from North Dakota today. By the way, if you want to check my travels out, you can just look at our website at willag.org. My Twitter account is posted there, or if you follow me on Twitter, that'd be great, at Commodity Week. You can see what I've been up to for the last week. There's a lot of fun that happened, and I posted about that. But today, on this Monday, you should see posts, certainly by now at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, from the fields of North Dakota, South Dakota, and I'm certainly somewhere across the great state of Iowa at this point, doing a quick crop tour across those states. So check that out at willag.org. Now, I've been out of the marketplace since last Monday, Kurt Kimmel, when I talked to you. That's the last time I did anything with one of the analysts. Can you tell me about this last week and what happened?
Yeah, we continued to see a little downdraft throughout the week there after Monday's trade on a little better weather forecast, uncertainty on demand, and concern about this COVID-19 outbreaks continue to escalate in some of these states. And the concern would be consumer confidence and, of course, the ethanol usage. The market was able, December corn was able to hold this 330 area. It's going to be a kind of key area to hold. Overall, the trades viewing corn futures caught in a 320 to 350 trading range. I imagine we'll continue our typical Monday. We're 2 cents lower tonight. We'll probably start out a little soft here in the AM session. The trade's looking for crop conditions report to improve about 1%. And the bulls getting just a little discouraged on the thought that we're seeing some fairly good sales to China, but the market's just failing to react. And the talk is that China's having to clean out some of their wheat and rice inventories to provide some feed needs here until we get into the Chinese corn harvest this fall to supply those needs. Localized flooding in China, there's ideas that maybe 20% of their growing regions being affected by too much moisture, rivers, and so forth. But we'll see how that unfolds as we go into the first part of August. Beans did a better job at holding in there. They consolidated sideways. Those November beans dipped down to that 888 area, kind of ground a little higher going into Friday's close. They're down about 1 to 2 cents this evening here starting out. Beans continue to see just some steady demand from China. There were some fairly good sales, but it seems like just about every day, every other day, we see 132,000 260,000 ton sale to China as they continue to gather some inventory here for their winter, fall, winter needs. Quite a few guys are still looking at that price quotes and seeing that most of the strength's up front here, knowing that once we turn the calendar into next year that the business will float to the southern hemisphere. So producers are gearing up to try to get most of the bean sales up front here and take advantage of the strength in the back, not knowing what we'll be looking at as we turn into next spring on the South American harvest. Big thing trade's looking for, of course, is the weekly crop conditions, the demand, but the August 12th crop report to try to put some type of yield on this crop as we move into that 1st of August.
Now, many people have been thinking that this crop, especially the corn crop, has been growing in size. I don't know about the soybean crop. What do you know and what do you hear about the size of the crop?
Guys are a little bit more comfortable. You go back about 2 weeks, there was some concern here in the east. We did receive some moisture to work with. The temperatures have been hot, but you know, they've not lasted long term. There's some holes out there. They estimate 10 to 15% of the growing region here is affected by too dry weather, and then we could probably see some yield concerns in those areas. A good chunk here in the Eastern Belt, guys are happy with it. Not a record, but they feel they're getting more comfortable with the crop here. Bean-wise, we got to get through August here. August is going to make or break the bean crop. Beans are kind of from area to area on how they look. But, gosh, you know, short beans can put on a lot of pods. Tall beans could be kind of thin on pods, as you know. So we'll have to get more into August here. And once guys are able to get out on the field and kind of do some counts, we'll have a better idea then.
What are you telling the producers? I know they're just sort of hanging on to old crop corn. I guess maybe we'll call all of those Vegas bushels, but I'm not sure if there aren't more than usual at this time. And gosh, we're just about to turn over to the month of August by the time we get to a week from today.
Yeah, if you still have some old crop around, it's a challenge to shop around and look for some mud moves in here to try to push that out the door. Commercial guys are comfortable here. There's a crop coming on. How large it is, we'll debate that clear from a year from now, but we're not going to run out, and there's a lot, I can't say a lot, but there's a good chunk of old corn to move in through here. I think you got to kind of get to where you want to be, because we're going to see that famous phone call on August 31st, whether you want to move it or pay another in charge. So we've had guys push it out the door. Option volatility is fairly low. You can do a cash replacement. So if something would blow up in the world to make the market go sharply higher, you can play a little catch-up that way, but I wouldn't be hanging on it too long here, especially if we can have some strength to get caught up here, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Up next today, you'll find an article from Jason Frank, an associate professor of agricultural economics at Western Illinois University, on the livestock sector, in particular the cycles in the cattle market. Jason left us this audio note.
The U.S. cattle herd is known to cycle through periods of expansion and contraction roughly every 10 years or so. Higher feed prices contributed to one of those contraction phases, with beef cow numbers reaching a low in 2014. Of course, low supplies translate into higher prices, motivating producers to expand, and currently there are over 7% more beef cows in the U.S. than during the low point in 2014. Last January showed signs that the expansion of the beef herd was leveling off, and recent reports suggest that appears to remain the case. USDA's cattle inventory report pegs the total number of cattle and calves on July 1st at 103 million head, just slightly above last July's inventory of 102.9 million head, and fairly in line with pre-report expectations. All cows and heifers that have calved total 41.4 million head, just about 0.5% below last July, which is driven by 1% fewer beef cows, as milk cows are about 0.5% higher than last July. Beef and milk replacement heifers remain essentially unchanged from last year, while the category of other heifers weighing 500 pounds and up is 1% higher compared to expectations of 3.2% higher, which seems to suggest that producers are not really expanding their herds, but also may not be cutting back as much as anticipated either. Same weight category steers are 2% higher, and bulls are even with last July. The number of calves under 500 pounds is down slightly. With somewhat fewer cows and heifers calved, the USDA has revised downward its January estimate of the 2020 calf crop to 35.8 million head. So that, consistent with pre-report expectations, it is now 1% below last year's level. This may help hold down the number of animals on feed and beef production for the remainder of 2020 and into next year. USDA's July cattle on feed report indicates 11.4 million head on feed, or just about 0.4% less than in July of 2019, consistent with expectations that it would be on par. In June, feedlots placed 2% more cattle than a year ago and marketed 1% more animals. Each of those numbers was within the pre-report expected ranges, but somewhat lower than those ranges' midpoints. The slightly lower number of cattle on feed reflects 1.5% fewer heifers and 0.3% more steers than a year ago. Even so, heifers still comprise over 38% of the cattle currently in feedlots as compared to only around 31 to 33% during much of the last expansion. So this is additional evidence that the breeding herd is leveling off, or at least not expanding. Given the inventory and cattle on feed numbers, beef production is anticipated to be no more than 1% higher this year than last, and then drop 2% next year. In terms of domestic demand, per capita beef consumption is expected to remain at about 58 pounds per person in 2020 and drop to 56 pounds per person next year. Meanwhile, given limitations due to packer closures, exports have taken a hit this year at 2.5% lower, but are expected to rebound 6% next year. U.S. trade agreements with China and Mexico and Canada over the last year should help to bolster exports, provided containment of the coronavirus limits packer closures and adverse effects on economic growth. All things considered, prices for the next four quarters are likely to follow similar seasonal patterns as in prior years, albeit at lower levels. Slaughter steer prices are forecast to average respectively about $99 and $110 a hundredweight for the last two quarters of 2020, and then $114 and $101 a hundredweight for the first two quarters of 2021, respectively. For 600 to 700 pound feeder steers, prices are forecast to average about $146 and $148 a hundredweight for the last two quarters of this year, and then $141 and $137 a hundredweight in the first two quarters of next year. Again, some of the major factors that could result in still lower prices are uncertainty surrounding trade and the coronavirus. If the virus continues to have negative effects on economic growth, that could depress both domestic and export beef demand, putting further downward pressure on prices. For the University of Illinois and Western Illinois University, I'm Jason Franken.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can read more from Jason Franken about the livestock sector, the cattle market in particular, and the cycles in the herds at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Speaking of which, visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. I'm traveling this week, but today you'll find my travels through the great states of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa, Illinois too, depending on how late you follow along with me as I move across those states coming back, and I'll be here tomorrow live again, well, to tape that is. But this afternoon you can see what my crop scouting tour looks like at willag.org. Yesterday, and we'll hear this in just a moment, I stopped and talked with Jordan Gackle in Cullom, North Dakota. Well, as you already probably know, if you follow me on Commodity Week, and certainly if you've been listening to the radio, I was off all of last week. I spent most of my time in North Dakota, some of it in South Dakota, and traveling back and forth. And one of the things that I came across, and we of course knew, was that farmers were still in the middle of harvest. In fact, a corn harvest, that is. In fact, I know there are farmers that finished up last week right here in this part of the world. We're now joined by Jordan Gackle. He's from Cullom, North Dakota. Don't know exactly when you finished up corn harvest, but thanks so much, Jordan, for being with us. Can you tell me about this harvest 19 for corn?
Well, in general, the harvest was never ending. We got started just before Thanksgiving and got about 5% of our acres off. And then we had our first blizzard, well, actually our second blizzard that year, and shut us down then for the winter. We went into the winter incredibly wet with a lot of snow on the ground, and so the ground never actually froze. And so people did try to harvest throughout the winter, but they were finding themselves sinking in, getting stuck all the way in January, February. And so we elected to just wait for a period of time when the field conditions were more suitable. Well, that time never really came. The spring turned out to be incredibly wet as well. And we finally got back in and started harvesting our corn in the very end of May and the beginning of June. And then we finished our last acres around June 20th, June 25th, about that time. And I do know that there were a lot of people just finishing up in our area here in the last couple weeks in July. And so, but finishing up is kind of I would say, an overstatement. We lost a large number of our acres. We had a couple of thunderstorms go through that took what was remaining down to the ground, and so it was impossible to pick up, and so we had some severe yield losses in that way. And so it was, by and large, a challenging corn year for 2019 that just never ended, really.
Tell me about the standability of the crop through January to May.
Yeah, well, actually, it was incredible. The stuff that we did get harvested before we had the thunderstorm roll through was, except for where snow was 8 to 10 feet deep on it, it was standing very well, and we were able to get our yields were actually very good. The test weights had come up a little bit from the fall, and the moisture was around 13%, and so a lot of people were saying, you know, for what we did lose in terms of standability or yield loss, we easily gained in not having to dry the corn and having a little bit better test weight. So, you know, different things kind of work together in that way. And so, you know, there were some good surprising things that had happened leaving it stand there for nearly, I mean, the corn had been planted over a year earlier. So it was pretty impressive.
What was the test weight like, and how did it change from December to the fall?
So the test weight back in November and December, I mean, we'll say the moisture first was around 25 to 32%. And that was going into the winter, so it wasn't going to change for us at that point. And the test weight at the time was between 49 and 51. And so a lot of it was not even being accepted by the elevators. But what we did harvest this spring, that, like I say, the moisture had dropped down to 13%, and the test weight, we had quite a bit that was between 52 and 53. Still, some came in around 51, 52, but we didn't have any under 50. So we picked up probably about a pound and a half on average.
And you went from number three to number two corn,
right,
over the wintertime in that case.
In that sense, yeah. Yep, some of it did. You know, very, still some discounts, but it was still being accepted as number two corn. So it was a good surprise as well.
And on that standing corn, how much did you lose in the first set in yield, do you think?
Well, so what we lost from November to May, I would say yields dropped roughly 15%, something like that, which a lot of it was due to corn being flat and just on the sides of the fields that had a lot of snow and some breaking, but not very much breaking the rest of the field. And then, so if if yields were in the 150 to 160 range, they were coming, you know, maybe in the 120 to 130, something like that. So maybe up to 20% loss, which again, for standing that long isn't great, but of course, with the economics the way they are right now, that's not an ideal situation. So,
and the thunderstorm then just decimated the yield.
Yes, yep. The last 30% of the acres was completely flattened, and so those fields ran somewhere around, give or take, somewhere around 10 bushels an acre. So we were definitely hurt by that. So I'd recommend not letting corn, if you can, stand out till July, but we didn't really have an option. So it is what it is at this point. So
we know from USDA's numbers that there are a large number of PP acres all for this year in the state of North Dakota. How did that go for you this year, and how much PP did you have last year?
Yeah, good question. Last year we thought we had a lot of acres last year. I would say we were about 20% was PP last year, maybe 25 at most. And so coming into this year, we thought we'd, you know, have a good opportunity to get those fields planted. Well, Mother Nature had a different idea in mind. And this year, I would say on our personal farm, we're in that 30 to 35% is a prevented plant. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the area in general, it's maybe even 40%. There's a lot of land that's not planted here. So it's been two tough years for planting in a row.
How many crops do you grow?
Right now we grow four. So we do barley and wheat for small grains, and then soybeans and corn as well on our farm.
How's the soybean and corn movement into this area changed over the last 10 or 20 years?
Boy, that has been quite a story. Significantly. There was some corn growing, especially a little bit east of here. There's been corn growing, but over the last 10 or 20 years, it has become the point where it's hard to find these small grain fields. Right now we're standing out in a barley field, but these are rare. They're few and far between, and so are the wheat fields. And so I would say that it's gone to about 80% corn and soybeans in our immediate area, whereas 20 years ago it might have been 20% corn and soybeans, I guess.
Based purely on economics?
Not purely, no. Economics is one thing. I think that you would find in the weather data significant changes in the weather here, particularly warmer and wetter. We have been receiving more rainfall, and the warmth has stayed. The frosts have come later, so there has been significant effects of climate change on the farming here in North Dakota.
Jordan, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And good luck with the 2020 year. I know it's been an interesting one so far.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Jordan Gackle is a farmer from Cullom, North Dakota. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday.